Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday, so let's go to the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, listen, I just applied for a new job, hanging mirrors. Yeah, it's something I could see myself doing. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Keep your day job, Duff. And not because we don't like your jokes, because we love Guns N' Roses as well, but keep sending them, even when they're stinkers. But one thing that's not going to be stinkers, William Regal making his highly anticipated return. One of the highest rated episodes in Talk is Jericho history was part one. But this time, it's a little bit more of a lighter fare, talking all about the British wrestling scene and the guys who influenced and taught him when he was getting started in the business. He's got great stories about Shirley Crabtree, a.k.a. Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, who Regal wrestled a lot and even traveled with. Also, Les Thornton, the man who shouldn't be named, Sid Cooper. He remembers Tiger Mask coming to Britain for the first time and what he learned and took back to Japan. William talks about his early days work in the holiday camps, his first trip overseas. He gives a lesson in British slang and the British spots that continue to influence guys to this day, like the Dick Byer spot, the Tony Charles, the International. He shares stories from his WWE days about Bryan Danielson and John Moxley, who he is currently with, the Blackpool Combat Club. It's a great conversation. It's coming up. So is Fozzy's show at the Sherman Theater in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. That's tonight, Friday, April 15th. This place is going to be packed. We're playing songs from upcoming album Boombox. It's going to be out May 6th, wherever you buy and stream music. And the Save the World Tour is still rolling. Come out and hang with us April 16th in Wilmington at the Queen. That's Delaware. April 17th, Poughkeepsie at the Chance. April 18th, Monday, Leesburg, Virginia at the Tally Ho Theater. So many more dates. Just go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and VIP meet and greet information as well. It's one of the best of the business. And don't forget to book your cabin for Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, the Four Leaf Clover. We're setting sail February 2nd, 2023. We got a great lineup of talent joining us. For the first time ever, we're going to our own private island, Grand Stirrup Cay. Come experience the vacation of a lifetime. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right. It's a long-awaited, much-anticipated William Regal Part 2 right here, right now on Talk is Jericho.
All right. So one of the most talked about episodes of Talk is Jericho was with William Regal. This is Part 2. People have been waiting for it. I've been getting asked about it. And obviously, your story was unbelievable. I think people were riveted by it. And with all the trials and tribulations we went through, which was a very emotional show, I wanted to kind of show the other side of you, which is the fun and also historical side. You've got so much history here, right?
Right, you see, you're not going to have me a blubbering wreck. Because you old man me last time. Let's let everybody know this. There's an old term in wrestling called old man in somebody, which is a lost term where if you know somebody's coming in there, you do something to nobble them. And you did that to me. You got me an emotional wreck. So my first night out, I go out and I can't hit me. I'm just mumbling out there and crying and don't know what's going on. Good, you're smart.
So you're smart.
You've learned a few tricks over the years, haven't you?
You're blaming me for you missing your time on Dynamite. That's a good excuse.
Had me a complete emotional wreck, you did.
First of all, I mean, we're 3 weeks in now and you've got this great thing going with Mox and Danielson.
Very fortunate. Wow, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been gone through the roof. It just fits so perfectly. Were you expecting this?
No. No. When I was asked to come here, it's like, can you just give me a month to get my legs underneath me a little bit? And I'm like, I can't help but wrestling, my wrestling brain. And I'm trying to get it up to, I don't feel like it's up to where it needs to be, but it's getting there. But it's just figuring, I'm in a new company and there's a lot of things, I'll be honest about this. When you come in here, I've just been in the job that I've been in. You got to come in here and you've got to go, what's everybody going to think? Right? Or do they think I'm going to be a direct hotline back to the old company, which is not my way. And I think enough people know me to know that. My word's my word, and I come in here and I work here now. So it's just... It's just a lot of things that I'd rather people hear this, because it's just, if you think it ever gets any better, you know this. It's not, this job is a lifestyle. It's not a clock on job. You've got to, we still think about the, whether it be stuff in the ring. So I'm getting used to being, William Regal is an act that has come after all these years. And even before wrestling, because of influences, we've all got our influences. And William Regal is a product of that, right? And it's just the act grows. But I've been in a different role for the last whatever amount of years on TV. I've just been out to strictly deliver messages and be a straight act, basically, apart from once a year.
This general manager.
General manager thing, which, yes. Like, so I'm just getting used to that. I'm out there. There's all this energy going on here, which I love. I love being around young talent that want to get better at this. I love watching. I love wrestling. As long as there's effort, right? As long as there's effort, I don't care. Different when you work for different companies, you do what they want to do. Well, I like wrestling, and as long as people have put effort in, I love it. It's just whatever. It's all different. We talked about that last time. So I'm just trying to get my feet under me, but I get put in. I'm fortunate enough. You're in with these fellas. Getting told that was why I was coming in was one thing, but actually, oh wow, this is. We're not giving that away here, but I'm just watching what's going on. And it's like, it's mind-blowing. And I'm sat and I'm like getting giddy over it again. You couldn't ask for anything better, that you've got the freedom to just be me again and have my little nuances and little twitches and ticks and stuff when I'm out there or just talking. And, oh, right, I can just, which I go all over the place. I don't know, no idea where I'm going to go when I go out there with, same when I used to work. Over the years, you sat trying. I haven't wrestled for such a long time, but basically, although I'm not a jazz music fan. I like listening to it live, but I was a jazz wrestler.
Yeah.
I just used to go out there and go wherever it went. Well, now I've got that freedom to do that again, and to absolutely, I couldn't be in there with any, and the people around me better. The greatest thing I could be involved in. Not overshadow it, not try and take away, but it's like, it's fantastic just to have all this. I hope that's coming across right.
Part of the act now.
Part of the act, and it's
the perfect
wow.
Casting.
Yeah. Well,
that's the way to put it.
What's so good about it, and again, it's all just fortunate things, right? Me and you have lived through a lot, so things come up. There's a reality to it all, and so you can't beat that. Because when you've got things you can dip into, one day, in 10 years time, you could actually put a piece together that would go, wow, this is these things all, because that's what's going through my mind. The stuff with Brian for 22 years now. It's 22 years this month, 22 years since I first met him. Thing with John's 11 years ago, 12 years ago. Do you know the story about when he first came to FCW, John?
Not really.
Okay, so that was before I had the opportunity to involved in hiring anybody. There was two people when I got there that I knew before anybody knew that things were changing in the WWE. Again, that was with H. And he'd asked me to do that job. Nobody else seemed to know. We went to FCW and it was like reckoning day. He's in charge of this now and I'm going to be doing this. And there was a showcase. I don't think the person who was hiring them before would have hired Seth Rollins or John Moxley. I think it was Joey Mercury, because he was already working there. Because there's no way that they would, that I know what their kind of mentality was. This fella hasn't worked there for 10 years, right. But at the time. I don't know if you might not even know his name, but he was a fella. And he was like, no, that's not his game. That's somebody else who watches independent wrestling. So I already knew, you know, get my foot in the door of wrestling the whole time. And so I get there. John's only just got there. Now, it used to take a month before anybody knew your name, yeah, because it's just the way it is, you know. It's the way it is anywhere. It's
like, so many people in so many, too.
Well, maybe 40 or 50 at the time, but it was a small build. It was great. It was fantastic. Steve Kern, I was giving him a thanks because he had a great thing going there. Norman was there and Billy. So they put on a showcase for H, and I'm sat there with him. And they all did matches and they all did promos, and then they said, is there anybody who wants to say anything? Now, I'd seen John do a lot of promos. Like you, that's our game, right? I'd heard about how good this fellow was. So I'd looked him up and I'd gone, wow. And I said, can we see John Moxley? And the people who were there at the time were going, who? And he was just sat in, right in the corner. Now, as soon as it's come out of my mouth, I'm thinking, this is day one on the job here. I hope he's as good as I think he is. And he got in the ring, and he didn't look like he looks now. He was thin, and he had a denim jacket on, jeans, and
hair.
Yeah, and just, he got in the ring, and they went, right, 1 minute, and he started. And within 10 seconds, there was a relief came over me of, he is that good. In 20 seconds, I looked across at H, and he looked at me, and he rubbed his forearm like the hairs are standing up on the back of my forearm. And then, again, it used to take a long while to get in, before you could get on TV. The next week we were doing TV and I was doing the commentating. I'd been doing it for about a year. We did three tapings. He was on the first one doing a promo, John. He was on the second one doing an enhancement match, and he was on the third taping doing another promo. And that's a lesson, hopefully, that people take from that is you need to work on all your game. Everything in wrestling is a constant thing. But that promo ability can get you noticed instantly. That's that lesson to take from that. If you're not working on that, and you know, from day one I met you, you've done a lot of that, or you, whatever you did, that's what can get you noticed very quickly. It got me once I got comfortable. Wrestling got me to America, but the wrestling wasn't working. I had to work on the talking and the character. That promo stuff can get you noticed instantly.
I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store. When we realize we're all out of cat litter, it's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. You mentioned William Regal, the character, was influenced by many. And I'm assuming most was wrestling?
A lot of it is wrestling. And just growing up with the entertainment that was on TV. I mean, I'm a strange Englishman. I don't like football and I don't drink tea in real life, believe it or not. I don't watch any sports. I listen to all soul music and I play with my lizards. That's it. But I always loved entertainment shows on TV, comedians or whatever. And so that we've talked about this on your last time I was on your show years ago, different things. But wrestling, from 4 years of age, it's now termed World of Sport, the British wrestling, but it actually was just wrestling. There was a show called World of Sport that ran from midday till 5:30.
And 5 hours long?
Yes, oh, but it was just different sports.
Gotcha.
And then wrestling was on at 4 o'clock till, I think it was either, people think it was an hour, I think it was 50 minutes. And then they would do the soccer scores after that. And if you actually watch a lot of old British wrestling, that's on YouTube, it'll come up Manchester United one on the bottom, because it was like the wrestling was taped from, sometimes occasionally it was live from for different major shows, but it was taped. It come up on the bottom of the score. So now that I've said that, I know there's a lot of people, young people, like to watch that stuff and learn, but they might find that interesting. It's Manchester United 1, Leeds 2, you know, whatever it may be. So I was watching that for my earliest memories. My mom left when I was 7. I lived in a house, and so it was just me and my dad, but I lived in a house that was 50 yards, my dad built, that was 50 yards from the house that he was born in. And I was with my granddad. I've said this before, but I was with my granddad. So that was my thing, sat on his knee at 4 years of age, we watched wrestling. And until I was 10, I loved all the character villains. I didn't really know what a good wrestler was, which is another learning tool for people. That's if you can find a mix of all of it, you need a bit of whatever connects. We talked about that with your audience. Character villains. Well, the biggest villain at the time was Mick McManus. I love Mick McManus. He wasn't so much a character villain, but there was a fella called Cyanide Sid Cooper, who was at the top of the list of people who influenced me really in a lot of the character things that I did later on in my career. Unfortunately, Sid passed away last year. Sid was, I can't explain it. It was just a one-man show, a whirlwind of, he was so comfortable with himself. He was an incredible villain, really good wrestler, but would fall on his backside for anybody, but knew how to turn it around. He would have me, as a child, laughing 1 minute, screaming the next, just a complete roller coaster of emotion watching him. There's a lot of stories about, so Sid, I got to wrestle him a lot when I was in my teens. So I wrestled him a lot when I was in my teens. This is just a little story of Sid.
You were the hot young baby face.
I wouldn't say that, no. There was, all my peers were all far better than me. All the people of my age group, I was really slow learner at this, and I just persevered and slowly, and I've said it before, because I was born at the right time and I was around the right wrestlers that were right, better than me, and to wrestle them so many times, and I grew to being 6'3" and became an heavyweight by the time I was 19, and by 20 I was getting, because of Dave Taylor, Pete Roberts, right, Terry Rudge, got me out of the country and I traveled the world.
Let's go back to Sid.
So Sid, I'm going to go forward a bit to go back. I worked with Sid a lot when I was a teenager, 18. But then once I got to 19, I was heavyweight. So I was wrestling mostly heavyweights or heavy middleweights. When I was about 20-something, when I was traveling the world, 22 or something, I didn't wrestle much in England from 20 to 24. Maybe 2 months of the year, top max. The rest of it was, as you know, because you were doing the same, going to different countries. Well, I turn up at a show. I happen to be doing a show for All Star for Brian Dixon, and I turn up and there's nobody else there. And I should have been on with whoever, whichever, everywhere. There's me and Sid there. Brian said, "Can you go on with Sid?" Now, Sid's come up to me. Sid was I would say he was a middleweight, because there were strict weight classes in Britain, right? And he come up and he went, "Right, Darren, now I know you're a big lad, and I know you're going to Germany and you're doing all that heavyweight stuff, but you got enough to sell for old Sid, aren't you? You got enough to sell for Sid?" And I went, "Of course I am, Sid. Of course I am." He went, "Now you're going to sell for me, aren't you? You're going to sell for me." So that was all he said. And then he'd go away, he'd come back. "Hello, Dad. You're going to sell for me, aren't you? You're going to sell. You're not too big to sell." "Of course, Sid, of course not." You know, and I'm like, no, I'm getting overly humble. Like, "No, of course not. Now I know you've got all them muscles now and you're big and no, you're going to sell for me, aren't you?" So, "Of course I am, Sid." We go in the ring. Now, Sid's about 5'7" and about 170 pounds. Right, I'm at the time 22, 6'3", and when I was looked like a bodybuilder, you know, about 18 stone, about 260 or whatever I am, right? Well, so I'm going in smiling because I'm on with Sid and watching him do his stuff, which is like getting in the ring. And this is how good Sid was. Max Crabtree, the promoter, trying to prove a point to everybody that this is what a good pro can do, and Sid was the ultimate pro. He saw an old lady's manky old fur coat in a dumpster. This is the promoter. He took this fur coat, cut the sleeves off it. He gave it to Sid with a bit of string. He said, Sid, I want you to basically go out and show everybody how you can make something work. Is really the story to this. Sid, if you watch a lot of old, there's a lot on YouTube. He walks in, he put this fur coat, this old, and it's a manky, dirty, filthy old thing with a piece of rope to tie it up. He walked into the ring like that. That coat cost $10,000, and he made it work. And there was lessons like that. I was getting taught constantly without realizing or knowing it. And like, yeah, anything. And he was so comfortable with himself, and he was a proper, proper tough guy. He's the only fella in the history of there's a lot of different gyms that Wigan gets talked about a lot, but there was the gym in Bradford where Dave Taylor's dad went, who was the man, right, when it come to all that stuff. We'll get to that in a bit with Sid, because there's a lot with Sid. Sid got broke into the business by Dave's dad. Sid had to live with Dave Taylor because Dave Taylor's dad had a farm, a pig farm. Mm. Part of his, to get into the business, work on the pig farm for free and get hammered, smashed to pieces down at the amateur gym and then whatever else, because Sid was an amateur wrestler there. But then once you got in the pro job, get hammered. They could never make him submit. And the only reason they didn't break anything is because Dave's dad had a conscience and wouldn't take it that far, but used to get that frustrated because he couldn't make Sid submit. He would not submit on anything. And he was like, he had a conscience and wouldn't take it that far, but I mean, just would not give up. So Dave, as a little kid and all his brothers, poor Sid had to, you know what Dave's like, he was like that. Imagine what it was like when he's eight. They're all monsters, right? Four of them were monsters. Sid, poor Sid, at like 18, had to babysit them all and stuff, and they're just smashing, running up. Dave shot him once with a pellet gun, you call it a BB gun? Yeah. He just run up to him when he was nine, like Sid's 18 or so, put the BB gun right next to his chest and shot him in the chest. I mean, this poor fella had to go through heaven and hell to get into this business, because that was the way it was then, right? So Sid's got, he's got cauliflower nose, ears, everything. Yeah. But tough as nails, right? So one of the regular stories with Dave's told me that they'd be sat around the kitchen table in like big wooden table, four brothers, Dave's mum and dad, Sid. And Dave said, I always knew, even as a kid, he didn't know. Dave was amateur wrestler, but his dad never talked about pro wrestling. That was, it was very strict. Come back from the gym, and he said, I could see my dad was just fuming, and found out later on, because he couldn't make Sid submit. He wouldn't submit. He said, many times, I've just been sat there, and he said, my dad's just sat there stewing. He's finished his dinner, grabbed the plate and smashed it over Sid's head and dove on him. He said, and then they're rolling about on the floor and he's going, submit, no, I won't. And Dave's mom's hitting his dad with a broom and that, get off him, leave him alone. Like, it's just kind of all mad stories that Dave had about why Sid. So Sid's as hard as iron. So back to me being 22, I've worked with Sid when I was younger. I'm back wrestling him again. You're going to sell for me, Darren. You're going to sell for me. Of course I am. Of course I am, Sid. We get in the ring, and I'm just overjoyed, right, that I'm back. I never thought I'd wrestle Sid again, and I just loved him to death because he was such a great fella. Get in there. First thing he does, he headmares me. As I go to get up, he just knees me as hard as he can in the ear. My ear goes black, and he just goes, and just laughs. And so... And knowing that I was probably going to jump, but I couldn't. I was just laughing like I wanted to just, if it'd been anybody else, I'd have jumped up and smashed the hell out of him. But he just, I mean, black, all my ear was black for like a month. It was all like swollen and that. He just laughed, yeah, like that. But Sid was just a wonderful character and could make anybody up and down look like $1 million and would fall on his back. And that's another trick I learned. When you watch somebody who's really comfortable and not out to act like a tough guy, you can fall on your backside and turn that round and make that humiliation into heat, mm-hmm. which is something I used to do a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I never did it on TV because it was one. I'm giving on a few things away here, but I used to do a lot of stuff, and you know, because I've wrestled you on TV and I've wrestled you very differently on, or do a lot of. I used to have a lot of the same things that I could put in at any time. I used to do that. You purposely humiliate myself. Have you drop kick me all over the place, bounce me all over, take a walk, have the referee do a count, get to about an eight, and me like panic, and run back in, and then come underneath the bottom rope and trip on the bottom rope, smash my nose on the floor, make a big production out of it, have you bounce me all over again, and then I would cheat, cut you off, and then I would turn it round on somebody. And then I would look at people in the, on the third row. You were laughing at me a second ago, and why I was kneeing you in the head. Not at that, used to get to people on a different level. Not only taking it out on you, but looking at them going, like basically saying, and sometimes saying it to them, I wish this was you because you were laughing at me, but he's going to get it now.
Yeah, this is your fault.
And this is your fault for laughing. I'm taking it out on him. And it's like, I learned a lot of that watching these fellas when I was younger, right? And it's that's why I would do the most outrageous things. But if you actually watch the follow through of it, I always got heat from it on the other side. Well, I learned that watching Sid, and I learned that what there was a lot of people like that, but mostly Sid was the one that got to me like that. And then being around all them fellas, you hear nothing but stories about older wrestlers that I did. I'm going to tell you another story because it involves Daniel Bryan. Brian Danielson. I had to try and remember. So I met this fella called Joe Cornelius, who was a very famous wrestler in the 50s and 60s, very famous in Britain and Europe. And his nickname was the Dazzler. Now, I don't know if you remember, when for a while, Brian in WWE was doing this silly little thing.
This is why.
This is the story why. So I used to wear, again, you'd hear off these old wrestlers, and I bring him up a lot, a fella called Terry Rudge, who was very instrumental in a lot of things with me. My style, by wrestling him, made me the wrestler I was, got me booked in different countries, and we went a lot of places together. And he was a character of the highest, he was just a wonderful fella. Shakespearean actor, he was a Renaissance man, really. He owned an antique shop in the same town where Prince Charles lives. But a proper, the real deal, you know. So he told me this story. Again, it's a story, everybody tells it a different way, right? It might not even be like this, what really happened, but this is how I heard it. So there's a lot of us British wrestlers, the older ones, you look at us and you go, ooh, they're a right handful, right? Me, Fit, Dave, all that, you know, the fellas that come over here, look, which we can be. We all call each other dear and darling and love, and it's just like it's just a thing. It's second nature. And it comes from a lot of old theatrical things of just us, like what we do out there. But backstage is like an in joke kind of thing. We're all theatricals. Keep that thought. Yeah, yeah. So here's another story with Sid. Here's one Sid told me. So Sid Cooper, one day, they're in Worthing on the south coast of England, and there's a theatre and a little building next to it, and he used to do a show there, holds about 400 people. Well, one night, it was summer, it was only ever ran in the summer, Sid has just had his match and sweating, and he's come out the back doors to get some, it's right on the seafront, get some sea air, and there's a play on next door, and it's like some, you know, Oscar Wilde play or something. And there's this old theatrical actor come out, and he's got a smoking jacket on and a cravat, and he's got a cigarette holder, you know, like with a, and he's come out and he said, "Oh, hello, darling." Sid said, "All right, how are you doing?" He said, "Yes." He said, "You're wrestling, are you?" He said, "Yeah, yeah." And this is a great line. This old theatrical said to Sid, "And when are you treading the boards again, dear?" Which I love that saying. So that's why a lot of these things. Anyway, back to
Terry Rudge.
So Terry told me this story about Joe Cornelius. I told it to Brian. Brian took the name of the Dazzler.
Yeah.
So in the 60s, there's a promoter called Jack Dale, who was an Olympian, very famous promoter. Now he's walked in the dressing room, and there's all these big burly men, which they were in those days, you know, cauliflower ears, broken noses, and that, and they're all, he's walked in and they're all just getting to the show and they're all going, hello, dear, hello, darling. And he's throwing a tantrum, right? What is the matter with you? Could you imagine if those fans out there could hear you? Big, tough fellas like you. You're supposed to be men. You're supposed to be proper men. Lovey, darling, what's all this nonsense about you? What's the matter with you? So he's cutting this huge, big promo on all these fellas and they're all stood there. Right as he's finished his rant, Joe Cornelius has come through the door, swung the door open. He's got a full-length fur coat on, a big hand-stitched leather bag. He's dropped it on the floor, flung his arms in the air and said, who wants to be the first to give the Dazzler a kiss on the lips? So I told Brian that. Brian took the name the Dazzler because he thought it was funny. And so that's where that stuff that when he was a Dazzler. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's like, I used to, I'm sure you had plenty of them from Calgary, right? Because there was always...
That's the kind of the theme of the business.
Because I know some of the fellas that went to Calgary and they were all people that were characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like John Foley and people. I didn't know him, but I knew, I knew about him. And I used to hear these stories of him. I know Ivan Penzikoff was there, referee, and I used to hear loads of stories about him.
A big pipeline between
them.
So, I mean, that's where Dynamite
and
you also had Robbie Stewart. Mm. And you had J.R. Foley and you had Garfield Ports.
Yeah, Robbie Stewart, I give a big shout out to Frank, Frank Cullen.
Frank Cullen, right, yes.
Because I wrestled Frank Cullen. Frank was really cutting edge stuff. If you watch him, he took the traditional style and added a different element to different things and was very, 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 and you know, went like a couple of things. It's funny because I was in a tag with him once. And I did something that I'd seen him do, and he went, oh, that's good. And I went, yeah, I stole it from you. Like, I saw you do that when I was a teenager. And he went, oh, I forgot I did that. He used to come up with different things, you know, like, and, oh, you know, we pride ourselves in Britain on taking that nice swan kind of flip bump,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and really being able to get
off. Front flip off of arm twist.
Twist, yeah. Well, and that was one of my things. But Frank was the first person I ever saw. When he'd get whipped out, he would pancake straight down on it, like really do it, you know, and just do different things and always. So, but I know he had a good run in Calgary. I think he moves backwards and forwards to different places. But I know he lives. He was in the prison service, I think. He was there for it. Yeah.
Okay.
So there was a lot of characters that went to Calgary, and you know, I've heard different stories. Like Ivan Penzikoff. I don't know what he was a referee when he was there, and Jeff Kay was another one. Jeff Kay was a referee when they went there,
mm-hmm.
But they were all old wrestlers, you know.
Right.
And I know John Foley went and stayed, but like Ivan Penzikoff, I've heard a lot of stories I can't tell on air about him. and that's the thing, I know a lot of stories I can't say anymore.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway. So even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts. For coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
The two biggest names ever in my era of British wrestling, Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks.
Let's talk about that. I was literally just going to ask you about Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks.
So...
Because these are great stories.
So, if you look nowadays, you go, what's that all about? But you can't imagine, because I grew up through this from the mid-70s, Big Daddy was a superstar of the highest order in Britain.
Yeah.
You're talking Hulk Hogan in the 80s.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
And people can't imagine it if because this was a man who was well into his 40s. He'd been a wrestler a lot of his life, but he'd packed it in. And then his brother, Max, who was a good, was a very smart promoter.
Max Crabtree.
He ended up being the, as you call it over here, the booker for Dale Martins, and then ran Dale Martins. It was called Joint Promotions, the company that had TV. Joint Promotions consisted of Dale Martins, which was the biggest part of it, and there was still Roe, Wisco & Green. Roe, Wisco & Green was in the Yorkshire area, ran by a lady promoter called Anne Roe Wisco, who was an absolutely lovely, charming lady. She'd inherited the business, and they just did certain areas by the time I came along. Before that, there was 12 at one time, 12 different companies. It was like the NWA, a part of, and they all got to have so many TVs. But it was either Joint Promotions, you were in that group, or didn't call it independent wrestling. The other promoters were called the Opposition or the Outlaw. Sometimes they'd call them out. Yeah. The bigger ones were Opposition, the smaller ones were called Outlaw Promotions. But Max Crabtree took over. Max used to be a wrestler, and there was three brothers. Max, Brian, who was started off as a wrestler, then a referee, then became the ring announcer. And Shirley, Big Daddy's name was Shirley. The part of Yorkshire that he's from is it's just to that area, but it's one of those names like Leslie or Ashley that
Shelley
can be. Yes, it's just and unfortunately for him, because I know I've heard the story, he had to suffer a lot. By the time he was named that, it had changed, and so he suffered a lot of not nice things when he was younger because of having the name. Even the family didn't have a lot of money, and they were given Christmas presents by the Salvation Army, and he was getting ladies, the girls' stuff, and it's just there's a lot of things going to it. But anyway, but Max Crabtree he took over Joint Promotions. And again, I'm sure that some historians will have a better view of this. I've just got the wrestler's view or my view, because I've actually been in the job and not having the statistics in front of me. So I apologise if I'm getting dates or whatever wrong, or, these stories are just how I've heard them. And brought his brother back, who'd pretty much retired out of wrestling. I think he was 40-odd, 45 maybe. And he used to look incredible. If you look up old pictures of him, he used to be a lifeguard on Blackpool Beach. And he was called the Blonde Adonis. And he was in the Guinness Book of Records, I believe, and now that this is what I was told, again, it might just be myth, that he was in the Guinness Book of Records for having the biggest chest to waist ratio.
Oh, wow.
Compared with the size of his waist to how big his chest was. Right. Something like that. And
he
was
a pretty tall guy.
He was
right?
tall, yeah. He was probably 6'2", maybe 6'3". Yeah. Well, by the time he was 45, he was heavy. And then he got heavier, purposely for the role. And his brother was very smart and made him into, do you know what John Bull is? John Bull is if you see like a lot of tourists get him if they go to England, it's like an old portly man who has got like a Union Jack, like old fashioned, from the 18th century. He's like dressed like with an old hat and it basically represents Britain. It's called a John Bull character. That's why a British bulldog. A British bulldog resembles the sort of character.
Sure.
So it's become, again, it's just whatever.
Yeah, that's part of England.
Yeah, part of England. So this John Bull character, which was a big portly fella, who could be your uncle or your next door neighbour, who could take on the world. And he did. And they brought, everybody got beat by Big Daddy. Well, without a dragon, you don't need a dragon slayer. And they needed a dragon. And in Manchester, there was a gentleman called Martin Ruan, who for some reason used to tell everybody his name was Luke McMasters. And there's a lot of stories. And I was around all these fellas a lot. But he was known as Giant Haystack. And although they never said it, and he always used to say, his family were from Ireland, but he was born and raised in Manchester. As far as I know, I could be wrong there, he could have been born in Ireland, but he was definitely raised in Manchester. And he was 6'11", and he was about 30 stone at the time, which was what,
50?
Something like that. I mean, when I was wrestling him, and I wrestled him a lot, a huge amount when I was from like 19 onwards. In fact, I had my first match for WCW was at the Earl's Court in England. It was against him, and then they kept me for the week on the show. But it was to look at him, not to look at me. But he wanted to wrestle me because he knew I was the best. I was the fellow who was wrestling the most.
And he was in WCW as the Loch
Ness. Unfortunately, right, by the time he came over here, he was not in good health. Right. It was a lot. It was very sad because he wasn't. It was just time.
In his prime,
if you go back and look, he was a big monster. Well, without saying it, you've got the quintessential British fella against an Irish fella when there was a war going on.
Right.
IRA. And Britain, that's another story, not my story to tell. Couldn't get any better. Theatre, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Daddy would be on with whoever, and they built up to confrontations, and then Daddy against Giant Haystack sold out Wembley Arena.
Wow. That's huge.
Huge. And the match, it was probably, other people can tell you this, but it was a tipping point of, it wasn't good. And then also, not long after, that they needed another monster, and they brought in the Canadian guy, who was Bill from America, John Quinn, Mighty John Quinn, who was fantastic. And he was the first person who ever got on a microphone in England. And that's worth watching. If you want to see heat, watch John Quinn's first. They give him, because nobody talked on.
So even Daddy didn't talk?
Very, might say one or two words as the announcer was just, might say one or two, no interviews at all. No, it was all, and if you listen, it's very well layered stuff. If you watch this, a lot of times now, you just watch the matches. You don't see the show. You don't see the hour. Nobody sees the hour. There is one or two on YouTube, but you pick the good matches. Well, there'd be a match on there which would usually, whatever weight class would, to give, they used to say, to give keep the strength of the job, give the job credibility. So like the good heavyweights, when I say the one, it's called the international heavyweights, that Terry, Pete Roberts, Dave Taylor, and you know, I'm in that kind of mold, thankfully. By the time TV had finished, I wasn't there yet. I was just getting there. But they were the ones. Ray Steele, another fantastic wrestler. There was a lot of them, really good fellas. Tony Sinclair, just really incredible fellas. But they'd go on and do like just aggressive wrestling matches. And it was to give credibility. And then if you haven't seen the show, you can go, well, this is maybe not the most exciting thing. It's not supposed to be. It's to keep people believing. And then we can put more of an entertaining match on first, and we can put a tag match on last, or we can put Daddy on last. And because Daddy was just a spectacle, and he would come out, this big heavy fella, and he'd usually have the local high school band playing him out, and they a song, We Shall Not Be Moved. I don't know if you've ever heard it. So he's coming out, we shall not be moved. And just telling you that, right? When I got into wrestling, you start learning things and you realise, oh, he is what he is. And even from 10, I used to be a Big Daddy fan when I was 7 until I was 10. And then I saw Mark Rocco against Marty Jones and my life changed. And then I started watching who the wrestlers were. I thought I was outgrown that. First time I tagged with him at 18, I walked out and that music started playing and I was a little 7-year-old again. And I was. Because it was a spectacle, and I'm like, I mean, we're Big Daddy. I went all to Pete, like, oh, and I tagged with him for. I was only worked. I think I've told that tale before, but I only worked for him for 3 months, and I realised I needed to go and work, get better somewhere else, because I was stuck in that role. And once you were in that role, that was what Daddy did, was being tags with a young baby face.
Of course.
You'd get in, get da 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 da. He'd get in, two belly butts, a splash, finish. And so I quit. At 18, I called Max Crabtree up and said, I'm sorry, Mr. Crabtree, I'm handing me notice and I'm going to work for Brian Dixon. He said, are you mental? you're on TV with our Shirley, you know? And I said, yeah, but I'm not going to... And he went, kid, you got to do what you got to do, but it's the worst decision you're ever going to make. Now, I don't all that in a bad way, because within a year, he was calling me to go back to work for him then. I
It was the right decision.
It was the right decision because I went to work for Brian Dixon, and from night one, not only did he give me, I called Brian Dixon up and said, Brian, there's a lot of things can be said about Brian. I've got nothing but good as far as the way he treated me. I called him up. I said, I'd like to go and work for you, because Robbie was already working for him, and Frank Cullen had put a word in for me. I'd talked to Frank Cullen. I was working for Joints and for Del Martins, and Frank had come on a couple of shows, and I saw him. It was a Blackpool Tower. Again, everything starts in Blackpool. Yeah. Right? And I said, he said, how are you doing, Darren? Because I'd met him a bit, and I went, I've learnt all this wrestling, and now I'm just in this tag with it. He said, well, why don't... He said, I'll talk to Brian tomorrow. I know Robbie had already talked to him, but I was... You know, it was like tipping point. And I called Brian and I said, Brian, I want to come work for you. And can I come and work for you, please? And he said, are you mental? He said, you're already on TV with Victor. I said, yeah, but I'm not going to get any better. I want to be a good wrestler. So, because I knew I could go places if I could. I'd learned all this wrestling from Marty Jones, like retraining me at 17. You can't do it if you've got nobody to wrestle with.
Yeah.
If you're just selling, you can't learn your wrestling skills when you can't. People can't. You're not getting a chance
you'll
to
never
put
get
them on
the spotlight. Really,
it's, but, I didn't care about the spotlight.
I understand
yeah,
you need the spotlight from a wrestling standpoint.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, but that was never a thing for me. It was just getting. We talked about last time that 20 years. I wanted a career.
Yeah.
I wanted to get good so I could go abroad and to do these things. Right. So, anyway. So that night at Blackpool Tower, I'm in a tag match with Big Daddy. Now, I've just talked to Frank Cullen backstage, and I'm like, oh, Robbie's already asked me about going to work for Brian, because I'd met Robbie that same year. It's funny, I'd only met Robbie in 1986. We started the same place, but he went to work for Brian Dixon after a year, so we never met until 1986, and then I wrestled him for a week. We know that story. But he was saying, like, you want to come here because you'll get to wrestle better people. So Brian Dixon said to me, look, I can, he said, I don't know why you want to leave. He said, but I will promise you this. I will put you on with somebody better than you every night. And that's what he did. And he gave me full-time work and paid me more money as well. It wasn't the money that I was after. From night one working for Brian Dixon, I was on with a fellow called Rocky Moran for about a month. Rocky Moran was trained by Fit Finlay's dad. Mm. They trained together, Rocky Moran and Fit. Rocky went to Calgary. I don't know what he was called over there.
He actually,
I don't know if anybody knew what it was, but he used to wear, he's an Ulsterman, he's a Protestant Irish. Oh. So he used to wear the Ulster stuff when he, because I remember him coming back from Calgary and he had knee pads because none of us had knee pads. Oh, where'd you get them from? Oh, I got them from Calgary. You know, things that nobody used to have knee pads. Fellas had come back from Japan and then have like K&H trunks from America. And Pete Roberts gave me my first pair of K&H trunks. I was like, I was giddy, you know. I got like proper international trunks now. So I'm in this tag at Blackpool Tower with Daddy. It wasn't a good night as far as the house. It was getting towards the end. This is September. Well, it's gales are blowing. Blackpool's still open, but the wind's coming off the Irish Sea. There's maybe 150 people in Blackpool, which holds 1,000 people. Mm. And it's a circus, and it's an incredible built-up venue for wrestling. And they're not all sat together either, you know. So I'm in this tag match, and I think it was Drew McDonald, and I definitely know the other person was Barry Sherman, great friend of mine from Blackpool, used to wrestle as Rex Strong. Two great big fellas, because Daddy was always on with usually at least one big monster, and then it might be Sid, or it might be somebody to move around, or sometimes two big fellas, so it was somebody, right? Against a cast of villains, shall we say. Well, it was two big villains this night, Drew and Barry. So I'm getting in there, I'm getting thrown about. Barry was a lovely, lovely man. He was nice to me when very few people were in this business.
Right.
When I was 16 and 17, when people wouldn't talk to me or didn't want me in the dressing room, he would. So I never forget him. But he was also, he was very gentle when he worked, right? So they're doing whatever to me. And he picks me upside down, as you call it, the tree of woe now. He puts me in their corner, hooks me foot, also nice and careful underneath the top turnbuckle. And he's giving me these stamps that couldn't have broke the skin on a rice pudding. You know, there's like just, like just these very gentle. Now, I'm upside down and I can see Daddy in the far corner. Now, Daddy was very, very funny. He had a very dry sense of humor. And he's leaning on the rope, just like with a look of sheer disgust in his face. He was well into his 50s by now. Like, this was on the downslide of Daddy, right? This is 86, like September of 86. And he's just leaning on the rope, shaking his head. And Barry's, like, Rex Strong's got to, like, stamp. And I can't even feel it. Just, I say, yeah, yeah, just, like, tell me. And I'm looking right at Daddy, and I'm like, and I can see him just seething. And he looks at the front row, and there's, like, three or four old ladies, and he looks right at them. And I can see it from upside down. He pointed at Barry and went, "Excuse me, madam, isn't he a lovely fella?" And I was like, I'm quitting. In that moment, I thought, I'm on the fence here about whether I go or not. It's time to go. And I made the call to Ryan Dixon the next day. I made the call to Max Crabtree and quit.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Tell us quickly about Daddy backstage with
Giant Haystacks, right? Oh, yeah. So this is again. So we've talked about Daddy and Stacks, right? So even me growing up, I've been wrestling for, you know, I say from 15, I was just doing little bits of things, but from 16 onwards, yeah. By the time I got to work for Dale Martins, you know, I was 18, and my second show, but my first show that Daddy was on, it was in North Wales. It's pronounced Llandudno in Welsh, but the English say Llandudno. Britain used to be, and still are, but they're not thriving resorts anymore. Before people started, could go to Spain and Florida cheap.
The holiday camps.
Yeah, holiday camps. Right. So Blackpool stayed alive, and a lot of them didn't, but they became sometimes nice, sometimes not. Nice place to live because you're by the sea. Llandudno is still it's a nice place to live. But it was a resort, and people went there. It was a very genteel resort, so they ran show there. So I walk in at 18, and you think you know a bit of something. And I'm just sat down in the corner. Well, next to me is Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. And all of a sudden, it's a weird, because you're in the wrestling, and I don't know, probably... We talked about last time how many ridiculous amount of shows I used to do a week in the summer.
Yeah.
So I'd wrestled and been around the crew that I'd been around, and I'd been retrained by Marty, and I'd met Fit by then, and all these. So I'm just sat. So you got to imagine, I'm sat there trying. First of all, there's all this. This is, I've grown up with these two, hated each other on TV, right? And there's two huge men sat, and they're like 10 foot away from me in this dressing room in Llandudno, and I ended up, it took me like, as long as this went on, I'm having to pretend to tie my boots up, because if I'd have looked at them, I'm sort of looking at the, I had to keep my head bent because I just want to start laughing out loud, right? But I'm like a bit giddy. So they sat there, and all they did, like, they were like two old women, talk about food. And so Daddy, it's weird, as big and as heavy as he was, and as old as he was, he was always talking about conditioning that, because from his previous days, when he used to get to places like Llandudno and that had a nice seafront, and people won't believe this, but it's true, he used to go out jogging when he got to the show, and it was like a, you know, that old man kind of, that just, you could walk faster than he could jog, but he would do it. He'd go up and down the seafront, and so he'd get back, and he was very, you know, clean, kept himself clean. So he's had a shower, and what do you, I've seen this a lot, and because I ended up working for him again years later, and when he was really old, and so I got to know him then. When I was a kid, like this first 3 months, I was just the kid, and that was it. Yeah. When I went back when I was 19 through 24, I wasn't, and so I got on really good with him, and he'd tell me all these different things, acting a lot of stories, but yeah. But I was just a kid, and I was keeping quiet. I was in a new working for a new company, keep your mouth shut, sit down, did I? So Daddy sat with just a towel on him, peeling an orange. He's always had an orange or a tangerine, and he's peeling it. And he sat there, and now Stacks is sat in his thing smoking, because he always had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And they just sat chatting, and this is the conversation, and I'm 18, trying not to laugh. Daddy always called Stacks Luke, and everybody else called Daddy Daddy. So Daddy went, "What time did you get in last night, Luke?" He went, "Ooh, about 3 o'clock, Daddy." He said, "Ooh, so did I." He said, and I went into the kitchen and I opened the fridge, and the wife, ooh, she'd baked a lovely, lovely, lovely strawberry flan. He went, "Ooh, had she, Daddy?" "Yes, Luke, yes, she had." And I went up to bed, and do you know, Luke, I just couldn't sleep. "Ooh, why, Daddy?" And just the thought of it, so, and this is my favourite bit that was, is absolutely, this might be a little bit distorted, this line isn't. He went, "I tiptoed downstairs." Imagine this 380-pound man tiptoeing anyway. "I tiptoed downstairs, and do you know, Luke, I was only going to have a slice, but, ooh, I just couldn't, and I ate the lot." "Oh, did you, Daddy?" "Yes, I did, Luke, with a nice ice cold pint of milk." "Oh, did you, Daddy?" "Yes, Luke." And,
oh, and, so great.
"Oh," he said, "this morning, oh, the wife, she was mad." And Stacks went, "I bet she was, Daddy. But you'll never guess what, Luke." "What's that, Daddy?" "She's only sent me to work today." "With no sandwiches." And Luke went, "Oh, there's no need for that, Daddy." And now I'm trying to do my boots up. And I just want to just, holding the tears back and the choking and laughing. So that was my introduction to them two. And my life went on. And later on, I used to travel, and not, which was something else was odd. I used to wrestle Stacks a lot, but he used to like traveling with me, and I used to go from Blackpool to meet him at, near where he lived in Manchester, and then we'd go in his car. He always had a brand new car. I thought the absolute world of Stacks. He was a wonderful fella. He was prone to exaggerate a tad, as quite a lot of wrestlers used to be. That was part of the gig at one time.
It still kind of is.
So, you know, because when you're that big, and by the time I was working with him and around him, he was 40 stone. He was huge. So he'd get in a car, and it'd just be done in.
You mean that he'd sit in the car seat, and just...
So he used to get about a year out of any car. Oh. You know, the seat would break instantly. It'd just mold to his body. Absolutely no disrespect.
No, but it's true.
And he just break the seat. Well, and he smoked in there. But he'd want to go, and he always... It's another thing. Main events were never main events in Britain. They were always the match before intermission. That's a weird thing, but it was.
Yeah.
Always. Main event was always the match before intermission.
And what's the reason for that?
So they could bugger off home.
That's exactly right.
Because you'd earned the spot. You could go home. And then there was always like a tag match on at the end. Or like a, they used to call it a send-em-home happy match. Mm. It was never really angles. Or if it was before it, like... different things that went on, but it was, although you go back to the same places, like the seasons in England were regular towns and cities were from September through May. And it was either every 2 weeks, every fortnight, or every month, regular places. And then you'd have one-off spot shows. But there was a lot of regular places out there. Like my local hall when I was a kid, which I went to from being seven, was Wolverhampton Civic Hall. You've played there.
Yeah.
Right, that's where the Slade room
home
is.
Home of Slade,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Which is my favourite band.
That's
ever.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I call you Noddy.
That's right, right, because I used to have sideburns. Yeah.
Like Noddy Oldham. Right, so. And then, because there was a thriving, in the up until like near the end of the 80s, a coastal scene in Britain of all these resort towns, that those shows would stop, and then from June... and through the end of August, it would just be every week in a coastal town.
Right.
An occasional place like Croydon in London would keep running through the summer, but most places didn't because people, it was summertime.
They weren't home.
Don't, and it's like, I've heard the AWA didn't run in the summer. You don't get much sunshine living in England.
Yeah.
And if there's a nice bit of the slightest bit of weather, if it gets over 55 degrees, you're outside in your garden. You don't want to go out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the way they looked at it. It's pointless running. We're not going to draw. But people go to the seaside. That's where you go. You went with your show. So I went to a lot of these things with Stax. Well, he was always on second. But depending on how many matches there was. But sometimes there's only four matches.
Oh, I see.
So, but then I'd have to leave. I didn't like leaving, but he wanted to travel with me. I didn't like leaving because I like to watch all the matches.
Sure.
Right? I still do. I think it's just something that,
it's part of our jobs.
I don't know if, I'm having to figure things out here. What if I have to do something with that person? I want to know what they do.
Of course.
It's just doing your own work, right? It's part of the job.
Absolutely.
That never leaves me. I was always taught that. Again, I was so fortunate to be born at the time. And you were as well, because you got the tail end of that, being able to travel. You were fought, you hit the right time, that couple of years. If we'd have both been born 3 years or 4 years later, that could have made the difference. You look at the actual how fortunate we both were to hit the places we hit, and to hit them when there was all these old pros that have been doing this for 20 and 30 years that you could, you pick up the tricks.
Mm-hmm.
If that had been, and definitely in England, because the job completely changed by the time, probably by 94.
Absolutely.
A lot of the people, it was like these tribute shows going on. So a lot of the fellas like Fit and Robbie and everybody had moved out of Britain. It had nothing to do with me. I mean, I just moved to America. Dave basically was just doing, fellas were doing overseas. There was, things had gone different. It was all changed in the 90s. There was another group of people, a complete different group of people that kept it going. You know, Doug Williams and Johnny Moss and all them fellas, they kept it going in the night and did all their thing. But it was a different, they were sort of more influenced by Japanese and American wrestling and some British wrestling. You know, there was obviously
Of course.
But it was a difference. Like a
shift. Remember when I went to Hamburg in 93, which I think is a couple of years after you went.
Yeah.
It was the first year they stopped doing rounds.
Right.
Because Vince's TV was so strong in Germany.
Yeah.
Rounds looked like something from the 1500s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so that was just the influence had changed.
The influence had changed. Yeah. Yes, everything changed. So we got, when you're going to Mexico, when you're working two and three times a day and getting, going at the right time. It might have been two or three years later.
That's a great point.
You need to sit back sometimes and just go, wow. We're getting old.
The right time in the right place.
Right time for us.
And also, too, 1 foot, a little bit longer for you because you started 3-4 years, 5 years before I did. But when I started, it was kind of the last vestiges of true kayfabe.
Yes.
Of just going into the ring and listening to the vet and whatever happens, happens. That's obviously not like that anymore. No. But that's the way it was then. And you just did that.
So I had that thing in me, and back to that of watching the match, I didn't like leaving early, because once I got around Marty, Fit, Dave, Terry, Pete, Roberts, they always said, now you need to learn to be a pro wrestler who works, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And that was what I became.
Who do you feel the best? I mean, it might be hard to just pick one, but you just mentioned a list, and you probably could pick any one of those. The best pro wrestler that the UK produced.
It's depending. You're asking me the best pro wrestler that the UK. I really couldn't.
Is there a list?
There's so many people who are influential. There's Rocco and Marty, because they revolutionised the style. Unfortunately, that people. Give to Tiger Mask and
the high flying style,
the aggressive, quicker style of mixture of if you watch them that match of them from 1978 when they're by round two and round four of the match that you're going, oh, this is 2 years before anybody's seen. That same year Dynamite was 16 then he. At his traditional British style, he was seeing them, and then he went to Calgary and took that whatever he took there with him. Sammy Lee had come from Mexico, brought Sayama came to Britain in
the original Tiger Mask,
yes, and had to keep up with Rocco and Marty. Oh. And Rocco and Marty hated each other, and were trying to outdo each other. So that was why it looked so good. But if you actually go and look at the origins of that. You can actually watch that match on YouTube now.
Marty Jones and
Mark Rocco from 1978, and watch it and go and take away that nobody had seen anything like this. It's okay if you'd look at it from different eyes, or you go, hang on.
Yes.
Right? Because Tiger Mask was still, well, he came to Britain. Typical promoter trick. He was supposed to be Bruce Lee's cousin.
Sammy Lee.
Sammy Lee, right? And then later, Maeda came and was Quick Kick Lee. So. He went to Japan, back to Japan. They made him into Tiger Mask. He brought Dynamite was over. Rocco was Black Tiger. Again, you don't need a Dragon Slayer without a dragon. So he had incredible, and he, you know, a whole list of, and Kobayashi and all them incredible people that they stick. But if you watch that and you go, so that's an influence, that's a huge influence on everybody that's come, whether they know it or not, mm-hmm. right? Because that's changed, that's where people who weren't heavyweights could go out the country. Because up until then, as far as if you lived in Britain,
right.
Up until then, there was this is the thing that is lost in history. And I think there's some stuff showed up lately in the 60s. All the good British heavyweights traveled overseas, but a lot of the year was spent in Austria and Germany.
And you've done that.
In the 60s and 70s, the place to go for the lightweights and middleweights, which was most of British wrestling, you know, that's why I have a very different outlook than a lot of people who are, and I don't want to say my size or whatever, but no, because I started off, it was perfectly, every weight division in Britain had a British, European, and lightweight and world champion. And so everything works, mm-hmm. right? And it's not about big fellas, it just all has its place on it. So,
right.
And then if you had them wrestle each other, it would be a catchweight match. If it was somebody out of a different weight group against somebody else, it would call it a catchweight match and different things. But they sort of changed that. And then Dynamite obviously was incredibly, it's just in a different world of everything. So there's, you know, Billy Robinson, you've got to say Billy Robinson because he brought that heavyweight style. And there's probably people before him that there was people coming over here. Dory Funk has told me that his dad used to like the British fellas and bring them over to Amarillo. And there's different people, Ted Heath and different people that came over and stayed. Ted Heath stayed there. Les Thornton, as you know, yeah. Les came over. You know, Les is called the unmentionable, right?
Of course, but please tell them.
Right. This is an old story. It's lost.
Because when I started in Calgary on my very first show, Les Thornton was on that show.
Okay, well, I've never met Les.
Okay.
But, I mean, I watched a lot of Les's stuff. He's fantastic, incredible. Yeah. But that style that I've sort of morphed into, it was a certain things that you had to be able to do all those certain right. certain sequences of things.
But less, he was became the you're not. It's like Cthulhu, the thing that should not be.
It was, silly superstition. I'm not superstitious at all. I do have a rabbit's foot. Do you know that?
No.
Started off as an ingrown toenail. Anyway, here we go. No, I'm not superstitious. But when I came in the job, because he was, he'd made it, right? He'd gone away and mm-hmm. stayed away. Same with Billy. There was tones like, and call him the unmentionable. So you eventually ask, right? Well, you can't say his name. Why? Because something bad will happen. What? Yeah, he's a jinx. What? Yeah, you don't. That. And I'm trying to think of his. He didn't wrestle as Les Thornton in Britain at first. He wrestled as Henry something. He was supposed to be French. And they used to call him H. Was it HP? They'd say whatever his second in it. HP. Oh. So I've heard a few stories. Again, these are just wrestler's tales. Right. So it's a story of a story, and there's probably maybe a grain of truth in it. But Skull Murphy, incredible heavyweight from Britain who was Finlay's tag partner, and they were a Riot Squad together. Another person who shaped me a lot, just incredible. You watch him, just picture perfect heavyweight wrestler, incredible villain, looked like a wrestler, wrestled like a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. And I got to wrestle him a lot. And all these fellas, just so fortunate to be around him and wrestle him. And a great character. Well, Skull, he used to wrestle as, before he went to join promotions, he used to wrestle as Bad Boy Steve Young. And there was an American Skull Murphy, and because he ended up shaving his head, Max Crabtree went, like I ended up being Steve Riggle. Nobody's going to know. We're in England, in America, the name. That's how you end up with a name, somebody else's name. So, but Skull Murphy's dad was, I never met him, but Robbie has great fondness and great admiration. He was called Roy Ball Davis, and everybody I've ever met and all the people, everybody in the wrestling in Britain, incredible respect and admiration for Roy Ball Davis. So this is just a story I've heard. It's what Terry Rudge, I think, told me this. So there's all these things about Les being a jinx. So one day Les has gone up to Roy and said, can I borrow your car, Roy? I've got a job tonight. No. Why not? Because something will happen to it. Don't be silly. You don't buy into all that nonsense, do you? No, you're not having it. Roy, don't be silly. Nothing's going to happen to it. It's not going to happen. No. Eventually, he said, look, you're a grown man. You don't believe in all that nonsense. Right. Look, just look after it. Gives him the keys. So this is the story I heard again. It could be complete. They're from Plymouth. Or he was down in Plymouth. Something. And Roy's out Sunday morning fishing on the end of the pier, and Les comes walking along with his head down, car keys in his hand, and Roy's gone, where's the car? Well, you're never going to believe this, Roy, but I was driving along this country lane to wherever he was going, he said, and a cow just jumped out of a field and landed up on top of the car, and your car's right off. And he went, oh, he said, don't worry. Handed him the keys back. Don't worry about it anyway, Roy. He said, my insurance will cover it. Smacked him on the back and knocked him over the rail into the sea. He went off the pier. And so I don't know if that's true or not, but that's how it was told to me. And so there was this big thing. So I'm in the car one night. I've gone to Bridlington. There's me, Marty Jones, King Ben, and his son, Mark McCoy, Kid McCoy, who was me and Kid McCoy trained together at Marty's. We were the only two that stuck it out because Marty would run people off. Mm. And I was already wrestling. Kid McCoy, if you go back and watch him, fantastic. He was a lightweight wrestler. One day he just had enough. I don't know what happened. I don't know. It was after I left. Me and him got on very well. We trained together for 18 months every Sunday. And he really is. It's fantastic matches of him and Johnny Saint and Danny Collins. And all the really good fellas. He was really good. Far better than me. Again, another person, like, they were all better than me. Robbie, Kid McCoy, Danny Collins, Richie Brooks, another one. They were so much better than me. I just slowly came along.
Yeah.
So there's me, Kid McCoy, in the back We're driving back, and it's a like a what they call a dual carriageway in England. So you cut four lane highway here, right? Yeah, is that what you cut? Yeah. And it's coming out of Bridlington. It's another coastal place, like coming back to go to where me and where our cars are to the meet. And Les's name comes up, and King Ben's going, oh, don't mention it. Marty has no, he just, he is what he is, right? He's going, what? You don't believe in that old cobblers, do you? You know, a lot of old nonsense. Cobblers means a lot of old balls, a lot of old nonsense. You don't believe in that lot of old cobblers, do you? Oh, no. And he's going, Les Thornton, car stops right in the middle of bleeding nowhere. We're out in the middle of nowhere and the car stops. And me and Kid McCoy, right? We have to go and walk. And we had to go, it was like a mile. We found an old farm and got a can of petrol and brought it back, run out of bleeding petrol. And so that's my story. But that was what it was. It was like, don't mention. So when I come over here, like people would, I came over in 93 and again, another fortunate thing around the great people that would work through all the territories and that, you know, mm-hmm. Arne and Terry Taylor and Brad Armstrong and people that, and I wrestled them and it was great. But they'd say, oh, do you know such and such? Because they'd been there when the 70s and 80s, like Billy, Les, whoever else had come over, you know, there was different people that had come over, Tony Charles, and I can't remember. There's another fella, right? Let's talk about influential for a second, right? This is why there's these things. There's only two people in wrestling that have a sequence named after them.
Yeah.
Which is Dick Byer and Tony Charles. And they're the only two people. So you could, this is, again, giving away one of those things. To be able to go around the world when I was in the 80s, you had to know certain things. And you didn't, that's why you didn't, when you go, you could go out and wrestle anybody, but there was an international language of wrestling. And it didn't matter if you went to Japan, Germany, on that side of the world anyway. I don't know about, because I never got to go to
England,
Mexico.
Yeah.
But if you were in England, Europe, anywhere in Europe, you had to know certain things. And there's obviously an international spot, right? But also Tony Charles spot and the Dick Byer spot. Do you know what they are?
Well, first of all, the international is tackle, drop down,
leapfrog.
Hip toss.
Yeah,
that's international.
Right, international. So that's one everybody knows. Well, Tony Charles' spot is the Greco-Roman, I'm going to give it the proper term, the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, as Ken Walton used to say. Down to a bridge, jump up, land on them, jump up, push them onto your feet, monkey flip over, float over, bring them over, and there's some great footage of Tony and Billy Robinson doing that in Memphis,
Now, is the Dick Byer?
So the Dick Byer is Dave Taylor's thing.
Of course, he's the great destroyer.
And that, because he came to Europe and, you know, he was, but this was, you could just say this word to any of those old pros and they knew, so that was it. You didn't have to know any language, you didn't have to talk to anybody, you could just go out and do this, right? Dick Byer, and that's the thing I don't see people do anymore, in the middle of the ring, just Edmare somebody. And I'm going to, hopefully this thing's tying why some of us old people sometimes, I look at this a bit different. You shouldn't turn your back on somebody and run to the ropes. Not that you can't. You can do what you want if it works. But I was always taught the rope is a tool to propel you into your opponent. So you can glance at it, but you should know where that rope is. If you want to get really good at your technical stuff, if you turn your... Again, people kept my work honest when I was a kid. If I did something and turned my back, I'd have Finley hitting me before I'd hit the rope, would be behind me and hit me on the back of the head.
I see.
Don't turn your back on me. Yeah. Just to keep your work honest. So like with your pins, if you didn't have something on the shoulder, they'd lift their arm up. They're not going to expose the strength of the job. I know it's different now, but
it makes sense.
Just things, right?
Makes sense.
So just Edmare somebody in the middle of the ring, back into the ropes to give them a tackle. You can either use the ropes again because it's going to propel you into them. They drop down because they have no other choice. There's another reason. You don't just drop down for no reason unless you're going to do what Eddie used to do and throw yourself at their ankles on the ropes. You're trying to break their ankles in. If you're dropping down 6 feet away and I'm a trained professional fighter and I can't stop and kick you in the head, which it works. It's all different forms, but this was what I was taught. Trying to make everything mean something else, don't bother doing it. So, Ed Mayer in the middle of the ring, tackle, either just run off and tackle or hit the ropes and tackle. It was easier than them 14-foot rings in England. Yeah. Them big runs, you would just Ed Merriman and just take two or three steps back and tackle them. Take two or three steps back, person looking, see that they can't do anything to you because you're coming too fast, and drop down to avoid the contact, right? Mm-hmm. And your body motion, it makes you hit the rope. You come back towards them, they're still in a position where they can't do anything to you, so they leapfrog you and show off their incredible leaping skills and athletic ability, and they're not just leapfrogging you because they can. And then they lock eyes with you, and as you're running back, this is not the spot, but as now I've locked eyes with you and you're running at me full pelt, and now I can either drop kick you or backdrop you, and there's nothing you can do because the ropes have propelled you into it.
Right.
That's how you make things mean a bit more.
Yep.
You can just do them, and as long as it works, it works. But if you want to get... Some people don't have that ability, and if you need to work on little things that will make people notice you more. That's my...
You know what you told me that I still use this day? You probably told me 25 years ago, probably. 1996, 97 is whenever I drop down, I always hit the mat. Because you said if you don't make a sound, people can't feel it.
People can't feel it. If you watch your favorite fight scene in a movie and turn the sound down, it doesn't have much effect.
Yeah. I still think of you.
Yeah.
Every time I do that.
Yeah, right. You don't drop down the middle of the ring. You throw yourself at the feet.
Jump
right?
Forward, yep.
Because that's it. You're either trying to take their ankles out. Because when people ask, why'd you drop down? They go, I'm going to trip you. Well, yeah, if you're like Eddie, you're trying to trip me.
Yeah.
But if you're 5, 6, 7, 10 feet away from me and I can't stop and kick you, it's, you know what I mean? I just try to give people reason again. You don't need to, you don't have to worry about it. You can do it all day long, and rightly so. It's just different flavors. I just know that I haven't got your ability to leap on the middle rope and do a drop kick out. I had to work on detail, and some people do and some people don't. And if you don't, good for you, because you won't have to agonize over all the details that I had to agonize to keep a job, because that's what kept me around, right? So anyway, Dick Byerspot, Ed Mayer, somebody tackle him, drop down, leapfrog, reverse monkey flip. Dave Taylor used to take this perfectly. Reverse monkey flip as you get up by the ropes, drop kick, go over the top rope backwards.
Interesting. And that's also a spot that they use. Eddie used to use it in Mexico. So probably got it from Dick when he went to Mexico or whatever it may be.
Wherever. He traveled. Don't forget, a lot of Mexican guys went to Japan. Japan was the melting pot
that's
for
right.
a lot of people. Calgary was and Japan was. Mm-hmm. And England for a bit. And Germany as well. You know, there's these places where people had turned up. So, lightweights. Back to that. I remember. So all the heavyweights used to go to Austria and Germany. In the 60s and 70s, the lightweights and the middleweights, because... summertime, they went to Spain and France. Spain and France ran constantly, and it was basically the same life that we had in Germany. Not as much. It wasn't tournaments where you were in the same building every night, but you could take a caravan, a trailer over there, park up in somewhere in France on a beautiful campsite with a lake and a swimming pool, and you could just drive. And it was so Johnny Saint used to go to either Spain or France for the summer. As things changed a bit later on, but if the 60s and 70s, if you look at a lot of the bills in the summertime, we've talked about the summertime shows, it's usually the fellas on them that couldn't get booked overseas. Because if you could get booked overseas in the summer, you would be gone.
You wouldn't be
because you wouldn't be making
yes.
five times more money than you could in Britain.
Well, that makes sense, though.
Makes sense, right?
That's fair to say, yeah.
But Johnny Saint used to tell me about that. Again, I'm passing on stories of stories. This is how it was told to me by a fellow called John Harris, who was an MC for Dale Martin's and then for Brian Dixon. And he was around a lot of stuff. And he used to go as a referee. A lot of them used to go over there. Anybody that could go somewhere in the summer, make more money, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to France, but this is what I was told about Spain. Because I went to France in 1988 in the summer. I just got a call out of the blue. France hadn't run for years. I hadn't heard of it in the 80s. All the way through the 80s, I'd never heard of anybody. Nobody went to France. I got a call from Anne Relwisco, the promoter. Could you go over to I was going to, it was my first year going to Hamburg. So I was going there in September and I was just filling out the summer, working on holiday camps and whatever, up for Brian Dixon, whatever. I was working a lot. But because it was wasn't a fixed regular, if it was the winter, I wouldn't have liked asking, but because it didn't really, the summer was not, it was a 1 week crowd, if you know what I mean. Oh, I've just been asked, whoever I was working for, I've just been asked by Anne if I can go to France. Of course you can, yeah, go make some money. And I ended up going for, it was 6 5-day trips. I'd go for 5 days and fly back to Manchester and do a couple of shows. Because I had so much work. I could work in Blackpool three or four nights a week and work at the amusement park on a Saturday and Sunday, do like between 2 and 3 or 4 shows a day there. And then a show on Saturday night at the Sandcastle in Blackpool, a show on Sunday night 30 miles up the coast in Morecambe. It was ridiculous the amount of shows we used to have. So I was going backwards and forwards all summer. I did 6 weeks in France, and there was some of the fellas who, some of them...
Red reels?
It was just different.
Yeah.
And they didn't like the term, but like, we're not, like, we're artists. Yeah. No, and there was not a lot of skin contact.
Yeah.
And it was all very nice, but I was heavyweight mode then, or physical mode, right? Yeah. And that, to me, it was exposing the strength of the job, because it was drilled into me about that. But I fit in there, you know. Again, you just fit in, and then there was a few fellas that were, and then there was a few good. There was a few that, again, Germany. Some of them went to same as Edward.
Sure.
So there was this group. Me and Richie Brooks spent the summer there, which was good. But this is, I don't know how France came to an end in the end of the 70s. But this is what I heard about Spain. I was told it happened over about a month. It had run there for 2 decades. And in the same month, they put a entertainment tax on the tickets.
Right.
Which like doubled or tripled the prices. And also there was a long running soap opera in Spain. And they introduced a character which was a pro wrestler. And they exposed all the tricks of the business. And people just stopped going.
Wow.
And that's what I was told, and I don't know what's right and what's wrong about that. I'm sure somebody else will know better, some historian will know better. But that's basically how it came. So,
Was it a light heavyweight you're going to say, or you got a last minute?
No, you were on about the best person to come out of England.
Oh, yeah.
There's too many of them, and you can't. There's so many different. You've got to go with Billy, you've got to go with Dynamite. Personally, I've said it before. Me and Finley will tell you that the best person we ever wrestled was Terry Rudge. Mm. But he's a wrestler's wrestler.
Yeah.
Right? Pete Roberts was another one. Wrestlers will tell you he was the best. And if you watch Pete and Terry, you will see me.
Yeah.
Because that's my style, my original style, and I added the character to it. I base myself, my heavyweight style is based, you can see influence their influence on me. That's where it come on. So, I'm not going to get anybody, I'm not into arguing, everybody deserves, I just want to say thanks to every single one, every single Brit. You got me choked up again here, because without, there is no one person to me, it's every single person, every person who was in the wrestling before me, I wished I could give them like an award in front of, because without them, there wouldn't be me. They're the ones who captivated a young child's imagination and made me have this charm life that I've had, and that really, every single one of them I hold up there, whether I liked them or not, and when I met them it doesn't matter, because wrestling captivated my life, and it really has given me a really charm life.
Did I just old man you again?
You've old man me, you swine.
You want to end off with a joke?
No
yeah,
okay. Stupid joke, but it's you know my jokes. Yeah. I can't tell any of them. I get banned from everywhere if I tell any of my jokes now. So I sit in it. This is a really ridiculous joke. So there's this duck walks in a pub, and he looks up at the barman. He went, "Pint of Guinness, please." And the barman goes, "Oh, a talking duck, a talking duck." He said, "Where have you come from?" And the duck went, "The construction strike across the street." And he went, "You should be in the circus."
And the duck went, why would the circus need a bricklayer? Anyway.
So. Oh, man. This is awesome, man. What more do you say?
Right, that's it.